Hi, and welcome to the Friday Coffee Meetup podcast for Friday, November 1st, 2019. On today's episode, we'll hear from Helen McBride, an entrepreneur in residence at Caltech, on coachability, what it is, and why a founder should care. The Friday Coffee Meetup podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory, a Pasadena-based marketing and advertising agency that specializes helping healthcare, consumer goods, clean tech, and aerospace companies achieve rapid, sustainable growth. Echo Factory CEO Mike Schaefer is a co-founder and organizer of Friday Coffee Meetup. If you're interested in how Echo Factory can help your company achieve rapid, sustainable growth, you can learn more at echo-factory.com. Every week, the Friday Coffee Meetup brings together innovators, startups, investors, tech companies, and entrepreneurs at the Cross Campus co-working space in Pasadena. You can learn about upcoming meetups and how you can attend in person at FridayCoffeeMeetup.com. Now, here's Helen McBride with this week's presentation.
So some of the stories I'm going to tell as part of this presentation are from my time at Amgen, because I will confess to having been very reluctant to accept coaching myself back in the day. So I had been at Amgen for about 3 years. I was a team lead. It was a very exciting project, very competitive space. We had competitors at three other major biopharmas, and we were winning. And I thought we were doing really well. And objectively, we were. We were meeting all our milestones. We were moving forward. Everything looked great. And then in preparation for going through what we called a big portal, so a big door that you had to go through to secure additional funding for the program, they encouraged all of us to do what's called a 360 review. Yeah, you see where that's going. I was like, sure, yeah, we're doing great. We're rocking it. No problem. I get the results of the 360 review, and I'm like, that's not me. come to find out, my style, which had gotten me very far to that point, was alienating a big part of my team, and I was not trying to hear it. I really didn't want to think that I would have to change the way that I interacted with people, and I was too busy, and things were going so well, and why should I change? And a seminal moment came when my executive director pulled me aside, and she said, look, this is a test. You either pass it or you don't. And if you don't pass it, you aren't getting any sponsorship, you aren't getting any mentorship, and you aren't getting anyone spending more time on you. Because there's a line out the door waiting behind you, and the people that accept the help and are coachable get the help. And people who don't, good luck. I signed on for the help. But it was really painful. And so I'm going to try to go through some of the big high points on coachability and why it's important, why should you care, not just if you end up in corporate America, but also if you are a founder at a startup. I think it's just as, if not more, important. So first, coachability is really being receptive to feedback and improving your performance in response to what you hope is constructive criticism. Sometimes it's just really blunt. But it looks like, and I put some phrases here that I have actually received. I paraphrase them to protect the innocent or not so innocent. And what it doesn't look like. And I'll share one more story, which is of a pair of founding CEOs, neither of whom had a science background, I'll say. But they were running a biotech startup. They are running biotech startups. And both of them came to me through warm introductions. I looked at their pitch decks, and I gave them feedback. I give very constructive but blunt feedback, and especially on the points where I saw there were real deficits. One of them responded up here. He said, oh, okay. can we talk on the phone a little bit just to make sure that I understand what your big points were? And he was mildly defensive, of course, because I'm saying things like, I'm not feeling like your team is really contributing to this deck. I'm feeling like there are some deficits here. I'm not seeing the value proposition for me. It was hard feedback to hear, but he engaged about it. And 2 weeks later, I got this amazingly transformed pitch deck back. And I was like, this is awesome. And I was happy to introduce him to several investors to move him along his way. And he's in discussions with one of them now, where he's moving forward to a really good Series A to power his company forward. At the same time, or around the same time, I had the second experience, which was someone who was just like, well, yeah, I see you had some comments, but yeah, you know, lots of people have already looked at this, and it's perfectly fine. So I don't need to pay attention to anything you said. Okay. Goodbye. So just like the experience that happened to me, it's very true across the board. People who are willing to engage and receive that feedback and show improvement as a result of it, will just get more of your time. And the people that get more of the time of all these people who are willing to help you along the way, it'll just make it easier. It won't ensure success. You have everything else that you have to figure out along the way, but it will make it easier if you engage with folks and take their criticism to heart. But it can still be really, really difficult. I hear this one a lot, by the way, where, particularly where I am located at Caltech, where they're like, I'm a scientist or I'm an engineer and I know exactly what I'm doing and I don't need to know any of that business stuff. And I'm like, well, it turns out, buddy, that you want people to give you money. And so, yeah, you kind of do need to understand what the business stuff is. How are you actually going to develop that technology? And is anybody going to buy it, even if you did? Because if there's no real problem for you to solve, there's no gap, there's no market for you, that's not happening. Why would someone do that? That's just a charity. That's not a business. Okay. this one, I really that always upsets me when I hear someone who had a bad experience. They walk out of a bad pitch, they just really feel disheartened, and suddenly they take no accountability. It's their team. Their team sucked, and that's what happened. It can't possibly have been them. That is really frustrating. And I will say, they go to the bottom of my list if I hear that. So why it's important. It's not just about you. Usually you will have at least a co-founder. You will be building a team if you are successful to get to the next step. You're going to need people that are with you on this journey. You're not going to do everything by yourself. And so having a high-performing team that is also receptive to advice starts with the leader. If you yourself show that you are inflexible and that you don't need any feedback, why are the people working for you going to be different? They're going to use you as a model for the behavior that they are supposed to exhibit as part of the culture of the company you are building. You are setting that culture through your own behavior. And so if you can't model that, then your people aren't going to either. And that's going to really hamstring you along the way. You also better project confidence and likability. People are like, confidence because I admit that I have weaknesses. Yeah, because everyone has weaknesses. And if you can engage on that and just say, I'm a continuous learner, I'm still going to learn, I'm going to grow, I'm going to have things I need to work on, and I'm good with that, and I'm going to commit to that. That does show that you're confident, because you're confident enough to admit that you have a weakness and you're going to fix it, or you're at least going to moderate it a bit. You can't fix everything. The other thing is, and I see this a lot where I work, is people are used to being the smartest person in the room. And that's fantastic, but you are not going to be the smartest person in the room on every single topic when you are forming a business. You may rock it in the marketing side, but need some help understanding, so what are we selling again? And you may be a brilliant scientist or engineer, but you really can't express or understand as well until someone helps you what the problem is you're going to solve with this, or really taking feedback on what the final form factor needs to look like for, say, a device or a wearable. And one of the things I learned, this was the effect that I was having on my team, is when you're not showing and demonstrating that you are coachable yourself, you're not making space for your team to engage as well. So again, if you're not comfortable expressing, I screwed up, or I made a mistake, or I have something I'm working on, they're not going to bring their full selves to you. They're certainly not going to bring their criticisms. They're not going to bring their suggestions to you and engage the same way. They don't feel safe. You're showing them with your actions that they're not safe, actually. If you can't do it for yourself, are you going to attack them? Or, you know, have an interaction they don't want? So it's not a safe place psychologically for them to share their knowledge. And then why be lonely? Okay, so if you can build these people who want to help around you and develop your own personal board of directors, the one for your company is separate, and have people that give you honest feedback, you know, hey, sense check here. Is this really what I should be spending my time on? Is this how I should prioritize? You have to prioritize as a founder. You have so much work to do. If you don't prioritize on the things that are going to bring you the most value and impact, that really, again, can slow you down, hamstring you, and have you stumble. So you really want to start doing that and making sure that that happens continuously. So what makes this easier? Because it's not easy. It's not easy at all, actually, I will say, as someone who it's taken many years to cultivate this mindset. And in some sense, cultivating what we call a growth mindset really gives you that space to engage for yourself and also for others. So it's a quote from Carol Dweck, who wrote this book, which is actually, I think, like 15, 20 years old now. But it keeps getting brought back up again pretty much every 10 years because it is very relevant for so many people. So her quote, "In one world, effort is a bad thing. So if you have to try, then, oh, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough. You know, you had to try, you had to learn, you had to experience something, like, oh." But in a growth mindset, actually, effort is part of what got you there. And it's effort is what makes you smart or talented or successful. And having that idea that it's as I grow, as I work hard, as I learn, that has value and that actually the effort is part of that and is worth my time, that's the difference. And when that happens, you can start to feel some of this. This is an excerpt from these 25 ways to cultivate a growth mindset. The biggest one is just take ownership over your attitude. This is accountability. We can all regulate ourselves. We're grown-ups. Just really own it. So make it clear that you want to develop and open the door to feedback. I will say, people are like, why didn't you tell me X, Y, or Z? I'm like, you didn't ask. Like, you don't want to force your feedback on someone who doesn't appear open. If they open the door to that, that's a different conversation and a much more constructive one. And so we don't always realize, unless someone becomes a friend or something deeper than that, they may not step in and tell you what you need to hear. You have to ask for it. And dissociate improvement from failure. So we will fail, and we will go over and over and over again. And I will say, just because you need to improve doesn't mean that you failed. It means that you need to get better at it. You need to become more effective, more of something. Not that it just you completely destroyed it and just bombed. And think realistically again about your time and effort. I'm just going to say that again. You cannot work on everything, so you need to prioritize it. But you need to put this in it. I will say one of the biggest resistances that I had and my excuses for not wanting to work on my own development was we were just so busy. Now, I'm never going to meet these milestones. I'm never going to meet these milestones if I have to take 2 days off for this workshop to work on communication. I don't have time for that. I can't make space for that. But if you don't, and your team's not as productive, and your team's actually not reaching their full potential, you still won't meet the milestone. So in the end, I realized that we could still work harder together if I actually worked on myself a bit. The other resistance that I had was being authentic. I'm like, well, this is who I am, and I've gotten this far being this way. I've been successful to date, so why would I need to change? I don't want to give up who I am to become some plastic person that makes all these people happy or is a representation of what they think that I should be. Well, that's not what it's about. It is still being yourself. It is still being the way that you want to do things. It is still being authentic. But that doesn't mean that you get out of a coaching free card and that you don't get to improve or need to improve. It means that you have to find a way to do it while still maintaining your own values. And I think that's a big part. So the clearer you are about the values and qualities that you care about, that you don't want to change about yourself, that makes it easier for you to come up with ways to execute on a plan that's going to get you where you need to be. So you want to focus on the end goals, definitely, and how this plan and what you learn is going to help you get there. So for example, if you're working on your pitching and you get the feedback that, you know, you just look really closed off, or when someone asks a question at the end, you're right there, you're very abrupt with them, and it doesn't seem like you're really hearing or listening to them. Okay, well, you can work on that. You can work on that as your communication skills, and you can put something there and come up with a plan. Like, okay, I'm going to practice this. I'm going to have this partner work with me on this, because that's maybe it was coming out of anxiety or nervousness. It had nothing to do with how you actually felt about the feedback, but that's the perception that's coming across. So it's something you can work on. That's something you can fix, and actually pretty quickly if you practice at it. So if that's something you're hearing, then come up with a plan, put some time into it, and get it done. This accountability thing is a huge one, I will say. And it's one of the things that's a deal breaker for me if someone can't be accountable. So if I hear that and we've been working with someone for a while and they go out, they come back, and again, like something didn't go to plan, and they blame everybody else and have no personal accountability, then I'm like, oh, we're just so done. Because if you can't see that that's really important, that you are the leader of that team and you yourself cannot take accountability, that's not going anywhere. And then prioritize, commit, and get active with it. The only way that you're going to be successful with that is to really make a plan and then stick with it. And you can engage a coach, as people have. Sometimes that works really well because you get that gentle accountability. I mean, you've paid them for it, right? So that there's that. Know yourself. So if that works for you, that's great. I know some people who are just very self-driven and self-motivated. It's all about their internal accountability. They can just come up with a plan. They're the people who say, I'm going to go exercise every day at the gym. And then they just do it. And there's nobody else involved in that. And they just get themselves out of bed each morning. And they just, okay, from that day, I'm going to the gym. Okay. I'm not one of those people. But some people, they definitely can do that on their own. Some people need a coach. Some people, it's just the rest of their team, confidants, mentors, advisors, whatever you need to get it done and get a plan together and execute it. I recommend that you do it. And ultimately, don't forget that one of the three foundations of having a really good or great startup idea is the team. And so if there's weakness in the team, if there is a perception that that team is not going to be able to execute well because of these deficits, then again, you just go down the list. There's always more people. VCs and the people who are here who are live that life can tell you to see hundreds of things, if not thousands, over months. You'll just get kicked down the list, and you'll never come up high enough. So you could have the greatest idea in the world, but if you're not the right person to execute it, you can still get it done, but why not just become the right person? I think that that's a much more enjoyable thing. So, okay. So I'm going to give you homework so you have some gentle accountability for all of this, for incorporating some growth. So if you haven't ever done one of these SWOTs, anybody who's been in corporate, Stephanie, will recognize them because they're very popular in a company setting. So they're usually for your company, your strengths, your weaknesses, your opportunities, your threats. It helps you set goals. It helps you think about process improvements, changes that you might want to make to your organization. But you can also use them for yourself, okay? So you can use it as a rubric to solicit feedback. And I recommend you get it from at least 5 people. Send it to them in advance. Tell them that you want to get some feedback on these areas. What are your strengths, your weaknesses? What are some opportunities for you to grow in the areas where you might need help? And what are some threats? In the threats category, at a personal level, they're probably going to be the most important things for you to work on. Those are the things that are career breakers, or in this case, your founding breakage. So if you don't work on those things, you're not going anywhere. So I would recommend that you focus on those, and the weaknesses you collect as well. It makes it easy for them to jot down notes on it. And when you meet with them, ask clarifying questions and try to pull some themes out of it, especially after 2 or 3. Trust me, you will start to see themes. These may not be themes that you like, but you will see themes that start to come out about what people's perceptions of you are. I hate the overused phrase, perception is reality. It sucks, but it's true. So perception is reality. If people see you that way, unfortunately, you're going to have to work on fixing it. Even if you yourself do not feel that that is a weakness of yours, you're like, I care deeply about people. Okay, fine, but if you're not showing it in your behavior, then how are people supposed to know that? Okay, so you still have to fix it, unfortunately. So I'd say collate your feedback, look for some themes, and then prioritize them. You cannot have capacity to work on more than one or two of these. Hopefully they are linked, and you can come up with some ways to really plan out and prioritize the ones that are going to get you the most value. The same executive director who had taken me aside, she said, look, she's like, in many cases, maximizing your strength is a much better use of your time than addressing a bunch of weaknesses. The delta and the amount of change that you get in terms of your impact is usually much greater if you play to your strengths. The thing is, the thing that makes you strong is often paralleled on your weakness. I'm an extrovert. I'm surrounded by introverted scientists, okay? When I talk to them or get enthusiastic with them, I can shut down them talking back to me. I don't even realize I'm doing that because I'm just so excited. But that's still a consequence. So that may be my strength when I go out and talk to other people, get us resources, get new team members onboarded, because I can usually persuade them, like, hey, tell me what you're interested in and how we can work together. It can be very collaborative. But inside my own team, it can cause problems. So your strength will often be paralleled with a weakness. So finding that balance where you're like, okay, if I do this a little bit on the weakness, it's going to amplify that strength even more to make me more effective. Those are the real ones to prioritize and spend time on, because those are going to give you the most value and change and bang for your buck. So tackle those top two priorities. Think about the resources that you're going to use. Think about what success looks like. So sometimes this is tricky. For the communication ones, that's usually not so hard, because you can see it with people when you're one-on-one with them, or you can solicit feedback right after. You're like, hey, how was that? Or, you know, hey, I noticed you didn't ask any questions about that. Was there a reason for that? Or could I do better to engage you or get you talking to me and sharing ideas? But other ones are a little trickier. So I had one individual who came in and said, you know what? I just feel like I'm, you know, really not able to understand this business side of things. I believe in technology for human good and the advancement of human health, and I just don't understand people want to put a monetary value on somebody's health or their life. Ooh, okay. So we sat down, and I taught him a little bit about the business, how much it costs to make drugs, how much it costs to deliver a therapeutic to market, and why people care so deeply about that market at the very end. And that, yes, that means that at times you will not work on things like new antibiotics without big incentives, or someone will not work on things like new vaccines without big incentives. And that there are reasons for that, that it's, again, it's not a charity, it's a business. And I gave him some reading, he went away, he came back, he's like, I still don't like it, but I understand it. And I feel okay about it now. Okay, well, that's progress. So sometimes these things can be a little bit harder to address, but it totally changed his manner when he interacted with people. So instead of thinking like, you know, you're just this evil person that works at a corporation and I don't really want to have anything to do with you, we're not the same, he could better connect with someone who was also studying the same field he was, just in a very different environment, or not so different environment. So you can have impact in different ways. Biggest thing is a timeline. So anytime you don't have a set point where you're going to check in and you're going to be accountable and you're going to move something forward, that just drifts into space. It's just fluid. It never happens. So if you don't put time into it and you say, in the next 3 months, I'm going to do this class, I'm going to practice by coming to the coffee meetup, and I'm going to practice this new communication thing with people and see how it goes. Set some milestones, set times for it, and check-in points to make sure that you're holding it accountable. Again, if you engage a coach for something like this, and, you know, screen your coaches carefully, because there's a lot of people who want to be coaches, and not some of them are better than others. There's a normal distribution for pretty much anything in the world, okay? So most people are right in the middle, and you've got the two ends. So choose your coach carefully. But that person can provide that too. My husband has one right now. He works in the entertainment industry, and he's like, oh, I have to meet with the coach on Friday. I have all this homework I didn't do. So earlier in the week, suddenly there's this flurry of emails and phone calls where he's like, oh, I was supposed to set up 5 coffees and I haven't done any of it. But just having that little bit of accountability really helps. He set up all those coffees. He set up all those emails and chats. And actually, one of them turned out to be really great. They're like, hey, I want to come talk about your script. Can you send me a copy of your most recent one? So it really can change things having someone else, but you can also get an accountability buddy, someone else who's working on something as well. You don't have to pay for coaching to do it, but sometimes it can be helpful. I would recommend, if you're like most people and not one of these very diligent, you know, people who just can tell themselves what to do when they do it, to get at least a buddy to help you check in and say, hey, so I thought you were working on that. How's that going? Just a little bit. It can make a really big difference. And finally, I will say that on the flip side, I think one of the best things you can do to try to switch your mindset is to think about the people that you interact with when you are a mentor, coach, sponsor, someone who's providing help, and flip it and think about the people that you've invested the most time in. And sometimes it can be people that you meet someplace like here. Sometimes it can be through a warm introduction. Sometimes it's at a party and you're just like, oh, that's really interesting. Tell me more about that. And I've spent hours with, you know, graduate students who have an idea because I was really captivated by the fact that they're just so passionate, interested, and committed to making something work. Maybe it's not that first idea, but you can see in them that spark and you want to nurture it and see it grow. So think about the people that have made you feel that way and reflect back and say, how much do I show that and demonstrate that in the people that I interact with? How can I bring more of that for myself? Because it's very eye-opening when you think about it. And I will say, too, if you get these folks who know you well, who are already helping you, and again, you practice and show that you are checking in with them and updating them and say, hey, you know, I identified these two areas and I'm working on this. And would it be okay if I checked in with you now and again on my progress? That not only creates some accountability, but you're also building that relationship. In corporate life, we call it managing up. I think in the startup world, I just call it good business. So it's really making sure that you have those people who are invested in you, continue to be invested in you and show that you, in fact, are coachable. You're making progress, and not only in your technology, but also in your leadership and your ability to execute your ideas and hopefully return a lot of value to the people that have invested in you, both financially as well as with their time and energy. So I'm going to leave you with that, and I hope that you have lots of questions so we can kind of get a discussion going. Maybe some of the things where you have, you know, experiences with coachability. Yes. Oh, sorry.
Round of applause for Helen. That was amazing. So much insight, so much good information. We're going to pass the microphone around. This is a great time to ask Helen about coaching or mentorship or tips and advice. Not a great time to get advice or give her advice or tell your stories about how you're a good coach. So we're going to pass the microphone around. While we're doing that, quick question. As you're mentoring or as you're coaching with these Caltech entrepreneurs, what percentage of them do you think take your advice and move forward and say, great, I love what you're doing? And how many go, great, bye?
About 20% say great, bye. And it's not even the ones, I mean, the people who have done it many times, I get it. I don't blame them. They're like, I have done this 5 times and it's been just fine every time. So why do I need to change at this point? Okay, sure. But they go to the bottom of the list. But I have been surprised. Some people who even faculty that come off as being a little abrasive or dismissive, because they really, really want their idea to turn into something, they open themselves up. So even people that you might not expect when you first meet them, once they have that idea, they really get excited about it, they will open themselves up many times and be very coachable because they want it so bad.
Hey, Helen, thank you so much for speaking today. I'm curious about your role and if you could tell me a tiny bit more about how the EIR at Caltech works and, like, are most of the teams you're working with, how far along are they coming out of a lab going into a company sort of stage?
So I think each EIR, I'm the third, and my colleague Julie Schoenfeld is the fourth. We're the first two who have been at the same time at Caltech. The previous two EIRs had to span both life and physical sciences, which is a pretty big breadth to cover. I focus on the life science ones, so therapeutics, but then my colleague and I also cross over with med tech, health tech, devices, digital health, digital therapeutics. It's a mixed bag. So when you come into the role, it's a rolling cycle. So we start with some folks who are ready to go out and get funding because they've been working on it for a year. We have some people who really, they have this technology, but they are really not sure what to do with it. They don't have the clear problem to solve. They're trying to find it. Julie and I met with one founding team where they had some very different options because their technology was so flexible. One was in the health area and one was in the oil and gas area. We were like, ooh, that's different. and we really had to help them focus on what is the market that's the most likely to be attractive for investment, but also represents what they were interested in. Okay, so we've had it happen where the market that would actually be the best for investment, the prof is just not interested in. They're like, yeah, I get that consumer electronics would be the best place for this, but I don't care about that. I care about this wearable. So we help them focus on it, and we're there as their support team. So if we give them the information, they decide, and they then say, okay, I want to engage on that. I want to develop an idea around that and move that forward. And we help them every step of the way. So it's a lot of hypercare. The ones who engage the most and are the most coachable get the most attention. So it's like most things. So we spend more time on them. We'll work with them. They'll come and practice their pitches with us. We'll refine. We'll get them consultants. We'll try to get them some market research. We'll try to get them whatever they need to really be in the best position to attract funding down the road. And unfortunately, our biggest problem is the team. So the business side. We have really strong, obviously, science and technology, but the business side is often lacking. And so trying to help them find a match for somebody is something we spend a lot of time on. Yeah.
Over here, Helen?
Yes.
Hi. Great presentation. Thank you very much. Yep. My question is, so I'm envisioning being very coachable, right? But I have an investor who's coaching me one way, and I have you coaching me the other way.
Sure.
Right? And I don't want to be at the bottom of the list on either one of them.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I genuinely don't have an answer. I don't know what's right. That's why I'm getting coaching.
Right.
What do I do?
So you really want to pull some threads on the feedback that you're getting. So often there will be themes, but we may communicate it in different ways. For example, this one young CEO who came to me with his pitch deck, and when I looked through it, I actually spent so much time on it because it irritated me that the science was so good, and yet it was obvious that his team was not gelling. Now, the feedback that I could have given him was just specific on the slides, like, this is not right, this is not right, this is not the way we show things, this is not how you show pharmacology studies, da da da. But instead, I did that, but I also then at the end pulled back with some high-level feedback and said, this is what these things tell me about you and your team. Now, you may be getting that kind of feedback from one person and detailed feedback from another person. They actually will overlap if you pull some threads to find out, okay, well, so you're telling me this, and I get that. Thank you for that. But is there a fundamental problem here that you're seeing, or is this really just a technical issue with how the data are being presented or how the information is presented? Do you really have a problem with my market research, or is it that it just seems very juvenile, that I just haven't spent enough time in it, and that represents, I say I have a business person on my team, and yet this is obviously pretty shallow. So that's actually what you're saying, is that I have a problem with my team, maybe one of my team members. Some people are more comfortable with giving candid feedback than others. I am known for being blunt. I'm nice blunt, but I'm blunt. Not everybody feels comfortable with that or knows how to express that. Pull the threads. You'll see themes come out.
Over here in the middle.
Yeah.
Hi, Helen.
Hi.
So I'm coachable as well. I actually have a practice that after my clients, I do a bit of retrospective.
Nice.
So I did that with a recent client that I rolled off of. And there were a few people that were very responsive. They gave me the... So I have two questions.
Yeah.
One is the people who were responsive, and I have a style of like all right, we're not going to talk about like what didn't work because I don't want it sound to be negative. So I prepped them for so much because I was like dying to hear about the weaknesses.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe one of them gave me just one thing. Not that I want to brag or anything, but I'm certain I have weaknesses,
Yeah, yeah.
But they weren't able to articulate some of the weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So that was number one, like how to entice that a little more than what I already did.
Sure.
Number two is a couple of them dodged it entirely, meaning I was very responsive. Oh, if it's not a good time, tell me when we can schedule. Don't worry about it. My defense is down. Blah, 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 blah. Prep them for a half hour, but they still dodged the meeting. So I quietly went away thinking, okay, they don't want to. So how do you...
Yeah.
So how do you entice them to participate? Mm-hmm. So one is like, how do you entice the negative?
Yeah.
The other one is how do you entice entirely to participate in the...
Right. So usually when you have a problem with getting people to engage, it's often because it's something fundamental. So they don't want to, so they can't find something easy. So if you had a hard time delivering on a project or you had a difficult time, you didn't meet the milestones or something fell down, they can easily point to that and say, okay, objectively, that is a weakness. But what I experienced, and I don't know if you experienced this, okay, I'm going to speak to my own experience, but what I experienced was that unless the questions were set up in a certain way, and this 360 actually pulled that out, they won't say anything because objectively you delivered, but you made them feel like crap. So doing it, okay? Or I made them feel bad about themselves doing it because they felt like they weren't listened to, that their ideas weren't engaged, and that I didn't explain why I made the decisions that I made in the end, and they didn't feel involved in that. And when they didn't feel involved in that, they didn't really revel in that success. Even though objectively we were successful, their managers are like, hey, that's great. You guys did so great. You came in under timeline. Congratulations. And they're like, I guess I feel okay. So, you know, there's that phrase that people won't always remember what you did for them, but they'll always remember the way you made them feel. It's probably something like that. So when you have a hard time getting somebody to engage, it's often because we made them feel in a way that doesn't make them want to even talk about it anymore. They're just like, I don't want to talk about it. So you can ask different types of questions. So not about what weaknesses are or how could I have done things differently, but you can actually pull those things out about how can I improve around being an active listener? Or how can I get the whole group to come together better to create a safe space for everyone to share ideas? Or questions like that. So really pull those types of questions instead, and you're likely to see some different trends. Mix them up so you get a mixture of people, because some people don't... I don't want to say they don't have feelings. They have feelings. Some people just don't think like that. They're just like, look, man, I come in, I do my job, and I do it great, and I feel great about it. And they're just like, I don't really care about you and your feelings. And so you'll get them with the weakness part, but the majority of people do care about how they feel when they come to work and they work hard and deliver. And so you want to tap that as well.
Hi, thanks for your talk. I really appreciate some of the insights you gave and your transparency. What are some of the characteristics that we should be looking for in a coach?
Yep. It's like any other service provider that you engage with. Get recommendations, people who had a good experience with them, people that maybe left them after, you know, 3 to 6 months without finishing a program. Kind of get a full view of that. But ultimately, get people who actually will give you homework, hold you accountable, and spend time with you one-on-one. There are some coaches who rely on digital platforms where you just report in. They don't work with you directly. They're not looking at you and how the feedback is hitting you. It's it's a distanced type of relationship. The best coaches work one-on-one with you. They can stagger homework and have you work with other folks and groups and peers to get feedback, but they'll spend actual time with you, give you that homework, check in, and it'll be tailored to you, not just generic, to really help you with your performance. And definitely get the recommendations and ask questions around how much did this individual or how much did the coaching really impact your performance, and what do you feel are the coach's strengths and weaknesses themselves? Because if they're weak in an area where you need help, that's probably not the right coach for you.
Thank you, Helen, for your talk. Very informative and helpful. My question is, do you usually use a structured 360, or do you prefer to use interviews with team members? And question two is, do any of your founders see the value and then want you to coach team members? Okay.
So I don't use a 360 in, I think they're most common in corporate life, although there are ones online that you can use as a level set for yourself. If you're going out there and you have flexibility to be able to do it, I think it's a great starting point to have one, because the hardest things will come up the first 360 you get. So the big, big things will usually come up the first time. Once you've identified those and start to work on them, it's sort of frosting after that, right? So you can usually get away with doing the one-on-ones. But I think it's a matter of preference. If you're very data-driven, where you need to see green, yellow, red, and you're just like, it's red, I need to work on that, then that could be helpful for you. If you do much better hearing it from someone that you value and trust and respect, then, and you're like, okay, thank you for telling me that. That was really hard, but I appreciate it because I know you want me to be successful. That could work for you. But I think having that level set, because sometimes it's really nice to have a lot of greens. The 360 also gives you what you're really good at. So don't forget about that part. You haven't gotten to the place that you are at in your life without having a lot of green and a lot of things that you are really good at. Okay? Remember that. Don't forget your strengths just because you're spending a little time on the big weaknesses, because there's a lot of value in that. So I think it's unique to each person. I don't use it in an academic setting. I don't think I could get anybody to actually take one, to be honest with you. So I work together with a prof, and then he or she has students or postdocs. Do they ask me to work with them? Yes and no. So certainly they have their own relationship with their students and their postdocs, but what I will see is that some of them will start to bring the students and postdocs into alternating meetings. So sometimes I'll meet just with the prof and we'll talk about these big picture issues and moving things forward. And other times we'll involve the people who are going out with the company in the meetings. We'll alternate, and we'll usually plan a bit more when there are others in the room about what we're going to talk about and focus on. And again, it's really about sharing why decisions are being made, what motivated it, and what's going to happen next. Now, if it ends up in a coaching situation where, for example, a student or a postdoc needs a little more work, say with how they come off when they're pitching communications, or where we're not seeing them invest in, say, understanding the business side, but they really want to be on the business side of this startup, then yes, we'll have one-on-one. And I'm not going to lie, usually they want me to talk to them. They don't want to talk to them about that. I think in part because it just makes it easier, because, again, they have this whole other relationship.
Yeah. Thanks, Ellen. That was a very interesting talk. Okay. Got one last question for you.
Yeah.
You're in a pretty unique situation in the sense that you're dealing with startups that are in the biotech life science mm-hmm. space. And working with PhD and postdocs, actually you are dealing with people that might be the only or only a handful of people that have that kind of science knowledge or background.
Yeah.
And I hate to say this, but I think that kind of sometimes make them somewhat egotistical.
Sure.
And so getting grants, you know, you kind of have to be at that, you know, very high level.
Yep.
And to be able to get the grants, they're able to do the research and hopefully they can validate whatever it is that they're trying to prove. But then transitioning to a business, now it's a whole nother animal because now you're working with investors and, you know, who your market is and all that. So that transition, you know, getting these types of individuals to start thinking in that way, what are some of the suggestions or what are some of the ways that you use to kind of open up their mind?
Right. So a lot of it relates to the question that Minnie had, how do you really get these folks to engage? And it's honestly about how much they want it. So if they want to commercialize their technology, they have some awareness that it's not going to happen with them just being smart and knowing the science or the technology underlying that. That's got to be put to a purpose, and there's a lot of work that goes into it. They may not appreciate all of the work. That's part of my job, is to lay things out for them and say, these are the expectations. This is the minimum. This is the average. And this is where you would excel and differentiate and set yourself apart in terms of the bulk of the data and how you have de-risked this target or de-risked this technology to show that it could be used as a platform to develop novel targets or novel therapeutics in a certain space. Or in the case of device, that you would differentiate. So it's really about working with them on whatever level they're at. You're absolutely right. To get into a conversation with them, if they think I don't understand what they're talking about, we're done. So I have to do my homework, and in some of these areas, it's not very much. In some areas, it's a lot. And I just sit and read 5 or 6 papers in their space and really start to understand a little bit more before I go talk to them. If I don't win their trust and respect, then it's not going to work. So I think that's the first step. The second step is bringing, look, I've gotten 3 biosimilars, but 3 drugs approved and launched in multiple regions around the world. I know what I'm talking about. It's like, you don't have to listen to me, but if you choose to, I'm here to help you to be effective. It's your choice. I don't force anything on them. They have to engage. But I always say, you know what? I'm here to help you. I'm here to make it easier for you. If you want to engage on that, I would love to work with you. And if you don't, that's cool. I'm really busy. So I think there's that too, kind of a reach and withdraw kind of thing, because I'm like, I want to help you. I'm going to be there for you. We're going to talk individually. I'm not going to give you some blanket cookie cutter advice. But then, you need to engage back. If you're not willing to do that and have a conversation about what it's going to take to get to the next level, then that's okay, because I'm really busy. So check in with me when you're ready. And I have to say, when you withdraw a little bit, some they're like, well, wait a minute. I want to get my startup going. Okay, then let's have a conversation. So, but you do have to come with them. You're absolutely right. If they think you don't understand what they're working on and why it's important, then they're not going to talk to you. That's true.
Helen, thank you. Please give a round of applause. All right, so next week we have Cheng Zhu. She's with Basis Set Ventures. She was previously with Upfront Ventures, and she's going to talk about your board. So if you've had a startup and had raised money, you've had to bring on a board member. She's going to talk about the good and the bad and the ugly. It's going to be actually a very fantastic presentation. I'm excited. Thank you again to Helen. We're very fortunate to have somebody with Helen's expertise in our community. Very much appreciate you coming out here. Everybody have a great weekend. Thank you. See you next Friday.
The Friday Coffee Meetup Podcast is brought to you by Echo Factory. Learn more about how Echo Factory can help your business achieve rapid, sustainable growth at echo-factory.com. And get all the details about upcoming Friday Coffee Meetup episodes at fridaycoffeemeetup.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.